obvious. We got a problem here, and it's more than just Alvin streaming Punisher. When life begins to suck, who's reporting it? Luckily, got two friends who you won't forget. Coming live, Alvin and friend on survival. Laughing nonstop, case drops on a cycle. Louder than intrusive thoughts off an iPhone. How they make the world seem bright with the lights off? AFs, it might as well stay up. Lies being told like that dinosaur BS. Magnifying glass to the ground if they don't see us. Having the time, roasting your favorite pizza. Bougie ain't an option, it's the way. Take it to the grave, add moving to the place. You already know when they take the case. Laugh the pain away, it's affirmative.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I'm Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans.
Oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, man, I'm the mailman, can't you tell, man? Gonna post it.
What up?
To anyway, hello, friend. Hello, how are you?
Doing well.
I believe that we may be joined by some new people this week. I want to say hello to anybody who is stopping by from Morbid. Whether you are here planning to stick around for a while, or if you're just popping by, you know, peeping in the room, seeing if there's any donuts around, or you know, coffee, hot coffee available. Hello, welcome. Stay as long as you would like. We hope that you enjoy what you hear. If not, that's okay. You can move on with your life, and we won't hold it against you. Fran,
what up?
We were able to right a wrong that you have held over my head for some time and been really nasty to me about.
Yeah, I'm at peace. I'm at peace now. I'm happy.
I'm glad to hear.
You know, it was a great time being with them. You know, them guys are great. Love them. Love the pod. And it was a wonderful time, man. I finally had a chance to get up on there. I mean, I know you was trying to haul all the spotlight and everything and go on there.
Wow. That's a big accusation.
And you did your best to, you know, to try to keep me from going on the show because, you know, they'll love me more than you. But, you know, it's all good, right, though. They finally, you know, finally got a chance to go in there, and hopefully I get to go in there again. And yeah, great time, man.
Or going by yourself. I don't care.
Are we going to talk about P. Diddy, or is, like, it's not, is that going to come up again on this podcast?
No, we're not going to talk about P. Diddy. No, we're not going to talk about P. Diddy.
Why not, man?
I mean, what do you want to talk about?
I want your thoughts on what's going on, circling around the interwebs,
Hollywood's
social media. What's going on here?
Hollywood, something else, man. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question. What do you think is next?
I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into it because this is, bro. I've been doing this for years, bro. I never wanted to bring it to the podcast. I've seen all the videos, bro. I'm not getting into it. You're not. You keep trying, bro.
Me?
You keep trying to make me go on the crazy. I sound like a cuckoo Alex Jones person on this podcast, and it's not going to happen. I'm not doing it.
But you just don't make $1 billion, though. Just off of albums and music. Like, I just don't. That's hard for me to believe. I'm sorry. Hey, you know how much $1 billion? Do you understand how much money that is?
It's a lot of money.
It's insane. You don't do that just. You don't make $1 billion. I don't know, man. Maybe. LeBron James did it, but, you know. I wouldn't be surprised 20 years from now it comes out LeBron James was doing some crazy shit.
We've had this. This doesn't even have to go into any kind of
30 years. He's been doing some wild shit. That's why. Like,
listen,
I wouldn't be surprised.
This is outside.
And that's my guy. I love him.
Listen, we've had this discussion. This is outside any kind of whatever stuff we've been talking about, Diddy and stuff. If anybody out there, I love the image. I love LeBron James, and it hurts me to say. It doesn't hurt me to say this. It's realistic. LeBron James has been the biggest phenom on the planet since he was 17 years old. If you think that man has just been going home to those games and going to bed with his wife for the last 20 years and has never done anything, that he's done a great, his team's great.
Yeah.
The NDAs are strong and solid and nobody's ever going to say anything, but you're crazy if you think that sorry.
It just
didn't happen.
The way social media is now. No. Nah. Somebody would have said something by now.
I'm telling you, bro.
Do you know how much of a follow- NDA is? Do you understand? I understand what it is, but you know, there's no NDA that could, no, but not now, man. Not now in this time where it's like, if I exposed to do, I'm the biggest, most famous person in the world. Somebody would have said something, bro. I'm telling you, somebody would have did it. Somebody would have risked going to jail or whatever, being sued to get that type of clout. Nah, man. Nah.
I don't know what a LeBron James NDA looks like, but I'm sure his NDA says something like, if you write a book about me, you get no money and I'm suing you for $100 million. Like, his NDA is something where it's like,
You can't sue for $100 million if the person doesn't have $100 million to give.
If you sign this, you have to come up with a payment plan or something. And anything you do, involving my name, I get the money for it. So what's the incentive to just be like infamous?
Yes.
You'd have to be a real crazy person. I think LeBron James probably weeds that out too. No, I'm saying that if hypothetically, if he's doing this, he's weeding out. He's only girls that are like, listen, I'm here to have a good time. We're both adults. I'll sign this. I just want to be next to Glory for a little bit. I just like greatness. I just want to spend some time with some greatness. I'll sign this because I have no intention of writing a book, whatever, because I'm sure his thing says, I get the money for the book. I get the money for the docuseries. I get everything.
Nah. Squeaky clean.
Okay. God bless. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into some fucked up shit. So stick around.
Ice Cold Case is the podcast looking into the unsolved murder of J.C. McGee 21 years ago in Belmont County.
Why is she coming out of the clear blue and starting to ask questions about this? What's going on here?
It's weird. It's strange.
Yeah, I never thought of him as a suspect.
We have done nothing to cover this up.
Records were all accidentally destroyed in different ways.
A lot of sick stuff was going on.
Point blank shot him.
There was a saying, you want to kill somebody, do it in Belmont County.
I'm just so glad that you are not scared.
It's really hard to establish any rapport at all with anybody.
Man, y'all know I didn't do this, man. What the?
Ice Cold Case, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom. But let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of my MyLifeInABook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out MyLifeInABook.com. That's MyLifeInABook.com. And use code AMP. That's A, M as in Mother's Day. P at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day. One more time, that's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today.
All right, and we are back. Fran, this week, this story was suggested by you. Great suggestion. This is a story that I believe hit the internet really hard. This is a viral story from a few years ago, crazy, and I'm surprised we haven't done it sooner. But even until this year, there have been people still being convicted for this. So it felt like a good timing to come through and, you know, retouch on the story of Junior Guzman from New York, because this is such an interesting story because it's so much bigger than him, even though it's him. And we'll get into that, obviously, but just the way that this unfolded is so wild that there's so many nuances to that can take us into. I feel like this is going to be a tangenty conversation, and I'm looking forward to it because there's a lot to talk about. What are your thoughts on, like, what came across your path that you were like, let's do this one?
Well, I remember the story when it happened, but then to see something to remind me of it, because it's like, it's one of those things where I love true crime, but one thing and correct me if I'm wrong when I say this, the one thing I kind of hate is where it's like, all the information is not out at that moment where I go, what, I think it's just my anxiety where I go like, what happened? I need to know what happened. I don't know if it's just a,
like an active case. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, to keep me at ease. I don't know what it is where I go like, you know, I need to know all the details. And obviously if it just happened, there is not a lot of details.
Mm-hmm.
So like time passed and this had me thinking like, damn, time go by fast. Cause I remember this case when it first happened. Now I saw it again. There's more shit out. It's more information out. Now I'm reading and I'm going like, oh, I didn't know this
at the time,
this information, this business information. And it's kind of, and then reading it now is like, it sucks, heartbreaking for sure. And but the one thing, one of my biggest fears, I don't know if I told you this, one of my biggest fears is mistaken identity. Oh, I don't know if it's because of the city we live
police,
in.
Police, people, and
I don't know if it's because of where we live or just like just the way the environment is now, environmental climate. Like I just don't know what it is where I go like, I don't know what, like, I just don't know, man. Like, I remember when I had my charger, the car I had, and a lot of people have chargers.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I used to be scared of is like, man, I hope nobody
did some dirt in a white charger.
Yeah, man. I don't know what it is, man. I just don't want to go out that way, man. For something to happen to
that
me,
just didn't
like,
came your way for no reason.
Yeah, it's just like, it was just a mistake. It's like, damn.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
That's one of my biggest fears, man. I hate it.
And that's what I mean about, that's one of the aspects of the story that makes it so sad is that.
Yeah.
We already have that fear of like just driving down the street, you know, afraid the police might run your tag wrong and do miscalculate something or think they saw you do something and they pull you over and a traffic stop can go wrong.
Yeah.
So now it's like you can fit the description in multiple ways. The stress of that is, come on, just existing is crazy. You know, just trying to be a human being in the world and you got to worry about looking like somebody kind of. So anyway. Lisandro Jr. Guzman Feliz was a 15-year-old boy living in the boogie-down Bronx in 2018. It was a summer night in June when Jr. came down from his apartment where he lived with his mother, Leandra, so he could lend a friend $5, which was something his mom says he had friends. His friends would ask to borrow money all the time. She's just like, this specific friend, if he asked to borrow some money, she's like, I would give it to him. He was like a family friend. Unfortunately, in a circumstance of what seems to be nothing more than bad timing, the Trinitarios gang had simultaneously set out for the night on a hunt for rival gang members. So at the same time Junior Guzman is going downstairs to go meet up with his friend and lend him some money, the Trinitarios are loading up four cars to go hunting for enemies. So they're both on the street at the same time. If he would ask for the money tomorrow, maybe Guzman would have stayed in the house and played PS4. Yeah. Or PS3. It was 2019. Maybe he just would have stayed in the house and played PlayStation for the rest of the night. But it just happened to be at that time. And I'm not going to, I did a lot of research. I'll get into it and put a pin in it. But I know there's a theory or like a, you know, speculation about that timing. But it seems to me like it was just a coincidence and it was bad timing on his friend's part. His friend needed some money and that's when he asked for it. I'm going to leave it at that for now. But we can get into it, you know.
I'm not too familiar with gangs, but is that what gangs do though? Like, do they just like?
Yeah, man. That's famous. Like, Boys in the Hood, South Central. These movies, like, we're gonna go out. If you want to get your stripes tonight, you gotta go kill a op. That's how you get initiated into some gangs.
Okay. Oh, you just like, it's just like a night out. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound real.
I'm gonna get into it more also, but I mean, this is Again, I'm jumping the shark a bit, but I get into it more detail further along in the story. But this is like kind of the whole thing about Chicago. It's like, we're up 5 to your 9. Y'all got one of ours. We got three of y'all's. Like, it's just get back constantly, you know?
I always thought, I always thought it was just like, we just happen to catch you by yourself type thing.
No, sometimes like, it's like, we're going out tonight.
Chilling, but like, which name is out?
You know, he put up a Snapchat that says he's on this street. Let's go see if he's out there.
Yeah, but
now.
that's not the same as like driving around to go hunting for people. That's like, oh, this dude is, we know where this dude's drop is. Let's go get him. That's not the same as just we riding around looking for people. That's not the same.
No, I mean, it's not that different though either. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, I mean, but this is what they were doing. So, I mean, that is what they were doing.
Yeah.
The Trinitarios are a predominantly Dominican gang born and bred in New York City, specifically on Rikers Island at the correctional facility, the notorious Rikers Island, right? Their colors of the gang are lime green as well as red, blue, and white, which are the Dominican flag colors. So there was a big case back in 2014 that got a bunch of Trinitarios jammed up in a RICO charge. And by the end of the trial, over 140 members, including one of its founders, were convicted and given varying sentences, some as much as 20 years. So, like I said, I was going to get into it, but I mentioned Chicago. This, to a smaller degree, in the case of this Trinitarios gang, is very similar to what's going on in Chicago, where a lot of adult leadership from the gangs was removed from the streets due to a big RICO case. Mm-hmm. And basically what happens is that dismantles whatever structure existed. As little as it was, whatever structure existed is gone now. You're taking all the grown-ups out of the room, and what you're leaving behind is a bunch of kids left to fight a war with no real aim in sight other than revenge. So now you got a bunch of 14, 15, 16-year-old kids killing each other, and they don't really know why. They just know you're from this street, and we're from this street, and we don't like each other, and there's no adult there to be like, hey, man, we're getting money right now, or I call the truce, or anything like that.
Yeah, and that's what I mean about when I say real gangs, I mean like the leader as where there is structure, where it's like, we have a reason why we're doing this. Like, I know it's a gang.
Yeah. You
know, but I mean, like, just going out and shooting rival gang, just doesn't sound like structure to me at all.
But that's the
just
thing.
Sound like kids just going out and was like making a part of it. And I don't think that with real leaders, they do that.
But that's gangs now. Most gangs don't have one guy. Like a lot of the Crips, Bloods, the Trinitarios, they break off into subsects. So it's like three guys start a little smaller gang, and then those three guys, they end up being 10 guys. But it's not one guy that all the gangs listen to. That's why when Kanye West was like, we got to free Larry Hoover, a lot of the kids were like, I get caught up in, you know, this is all true crime still. Like, street stuff is still true crime. And a lot of these kids are like, we don't know who the fuck Larry Hoover is. Like, I don't think Larry Hoover coming to Chicago is going to stop these kids. Like, the kids are going to be like, Larry Hoover just spoke on a megaphone. Everybody's going to put the guns down. These kids are so caught up in like, bro, listen, I understand that I'm a whatever. I'm not going to say any specific gangs. I understand I'm a blank, but this guy killed my brother. So I don't give a fuck what y'all are talking about. We're going to do a ceasefire or whatever. I'm not stopping this until I get my get back.
Yeah.
But and that's where we are. Like, nationwide.
But that's what I mean, though, is like, I'm talking about like the way gangs are now. Not, I'm talking about the 80s and 90s type gangs is where like there was a leader.
Yeah,
there
like wasn't a whole bunch Williams. Of small. Yeah, that's what,
right,
that's what I'm saying.
That's what I mean. Like, that's what I mean by there wasn't a whole bunch of small groups. It was like one guy.
Yeah.
And it was like, when there's need to be action, he'll make that call. Now it's just like, we just gonna go out and just do some shit.
Yeah, exactly. We're saying the same thing.
And that's the difference I mean by like when I call them, they all can be real gangs, whatever. But I mean like from a gang back then to what our gangs are now, because it's totally different.
There's no one person that could tell anybody to stop doing something.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, it's chaos. But like I said, Junior headed out to meet his friend at the cross of Bassford Avenue and East 183rd, East 183rd Street. To lend his friend some money for weed. He kicks it with them for a little bit out there on the street. I think they were maybe in a car. And they're just kicking it. And Jason's telling them, man, the streets are crazy right now. Just a couple of days ago, another friend of mine got jumped by a bunch of guys because he looked at him the wrong way. So it's just crazy right here, especially over on Adams Place, which is a street in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. This street is like notorious for being violent and gangs riding around it and all that kind of stuff. Now, what happens next after Junior leaves this? Now it's like 11 o'clock at night. Junior leaves his friend, and it's not really clear why, but for some reason, allegedly, this guy, Jason, had just talked about Adams Place. Junior ends up over there on Adams Place. So he's walking on Adams Place. He gets spotted by a four-car convoy of Trinitarios. They spot him. They spot him. They point him out, and they take him for a rival gang member. Keep in mind, this dude's wearing a hoodie and some basketball shorts. He ran out. He just ran out of the house real quick, you know. But he was targeted by this four-car convoy. Somebody said, "Hey, that guy's from this rival thing. Let's go." Or they asked him where he was from or whatever. They start chasing Junior for blocks. He's running from four cars. They jumped out of the cars. They're chasing him for blocks and blocks. He's running. I mean, and all this is caught on several cameras. Like, they traced him from block to block running. Now, I want to say also that I'm not going to use this platform to speculate about Junior Guzman's friendships or his affiliations. I read nothing that would make me decide to sit on this microphone and question his affiliations or anything like that. His family said he was a good kid. His mom and sister said that he wanted to be a police officer when he grew up. He was even in some after-school police program. And they said he was doing really great in that. So I'm not going to sit here and try to Trayvon Martin Junior Guzman and be like, well, you know, here's a picture of him wearing gold teeth, or, you know, here's a picture of him with his fingers a certain way. I'm not going to participate in that because I think it's gross. I've seen nothing and read nothing that says Junior Guzman was in a gang, a rival gang. I saw nothing like that. So I'm not going to even sit here and even like go down that path of questioning.
Yeah.
By all accounts, this was a good kid and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that is as far as I'm going into it, because that's what his family said.
Yeah. Because that takes away from this. That takes away from the story.
It also implies, like, well, maybe did he ask for this? Was he deserving? Like, maybe he was a rival gang member. I'm not getting into any of that. And I've seen no evidence of it. Yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, this was a good kid who got targeted and mistaken identity, you know? So, like I said, Junior was chased through the streets and he sought refuge in a neighborhood bodega. Now, this footage is available on the internet. It's really hard to watch, but he goes into the bodega and he's terrified as soon as he walks through the door. He tries to jump over the counter and the owner of the bodega doesn't speak English. Now, I don't know if Junior speaks Spanish or what, but the bodega owner is like, I didn't know what the hell was going on. A kid came in my store. He tried to jump over the counter. I didn't know what was going on. He's trying to hide behind stuff. I got him from under a hiding place. A bunch of more people came in and I was like, take this shit out of here. And then these guys are punching him and grabbing him and dragging him out of the store. And
he said the guy didn't speak English.
The owner of the store, yeah. I mean, I don't know if he did or didn't, but every interview that I saw of them talk, like him talking and giving his side of the story, he was speaking Spanish.
So well, I'm sure he can understand what Junior was saying.
I guess if he owns a store, but he, according to him, Junior didn't say anything. He didn't know nobody was saying anything. It was just chaos.
Right.
That's what he was saying happened. He didn't know what was going on. Whether Junior spoke English or Spanish, he wasn't speaking is what the bodega owner is saying. And like I said, the footage is very hard to watch, and it also. This story very much reminded me of the story of Kitty Genovese, which is another story that took place in New York and Queens in the 60s, right? So Kitty Genovese was a woman who was a bartender. She was 28 years old. She was coming home to her apartment in the middle of the night after a shift, and she got attacked by a man. The guy raped and attacked her, like, in front of a bunch of apartment buildings. And a lot of this stuff was debunked, but according to the New York Times, after the story came out, there were 38 witnesses who all were like in their apartment buildings and looked out of their windows and saw her being attacked and didn't do anything. That was the way the story was told. Lot of it was debunked. There were people who testified in court. There were people who did call the police. There were not 38 people who went, what the hell's going on out there? None of my business. But the story and then the false telling of the story by the New York Times later on brought up all these questions. And it also caused social psychology people to theorize about this thing called the bystander effect. So the bystander effect is also called the Genovese syndrome sometimes, is this psychological theory that states that individuals are less likely to offer help to a victim in the presence of other people. So basically what the theory is saying is that if you're riding a car and I'm riding a car, we're both riding down the street and we see a wreck, a car accident, boom, we ride past, the person sitting in the driver's seat is bloody, whatever. If it's a busy street and I see you and driving in a car, I see three people on the other side of the road, I'm not going to stop and I'm not going to call the police because I go, somebody's going to do it. There's a bunch of people out here. Somebody will call the police. But if I saw that same wreck and it's just me on the road, I feel more responsible to stop, call the police, because I'm like, if I don't do it, who else will? So basically, what the premise that's being proposed is, even though that story was fake about Kitty Genovese, there's 38 people. They all see something happen and they go, somebody will call the police. Somebody will go out there and help. And then that makes you less likely to do anything. But if all 38 people think that and nobody does anything, then the person doesn't get any help. If that makes sense to people listening. So that, you know, that it, and it, this theory has like confounded psychology people for years because they go, this is just kind of human nature. Like, you're less likely to help somebody if you feel like somebody else will help them.
Hmm. I've done that. I mean, I haven't done that before because I witnessed an accident on my way to your house.
Mm-hmm.
I do this thing where I don't think, and I think this might be the death of me one day, man. I went and stopped and was like, are you okay, to both people? Because, and this was in a busy intersection.
Right.
And it's one of those things where I was like, I'm good. I'm not, somebody else to get it. I just stopped my car. I just think I'm just a good person. I'm just really a legit, genuine, good sure, person where sure. I got out and was like, I had to make sure. Because I don't think I would be able to sleep if I went home and was just like, maybe I should have stopped. Mm-hmm. I don't think, maybe I couldn't get away with killing somebody if it was me. Because I would be like, I can't.
The guilt.
The guilt would be the death of me, man. I wouldn't be able to eat a bowl of cereal and be like, you know, I just couldn't. I guess it's just not in me for me to do something like that. And then me to just go on with my life when I'm like,
yeah,
that person may need my help. And I just was like, nah, I'm good. I'm just, somebody else got it. I don't know, man. I can't. But just my body, just my mind just won't let me do something like that.
You're a good guy, brother. I don't know what to tell you, you know. I brought the Kitty Genevieve story up because, I mean, the bodega owner, it just seems like, in the case of this story, I don't want to, because people were outside of his, they called for this. I don't even know if the store is still open. They were like, you need to get out of here. Yeah. You didn't help this kid. You should have helped him, and you're wrong. And I think that it's really like, it's like this, it felt like this drought of like morality and empathy. I would have put up more of a fight. Now, if five kids come into my store and they have knives and machetes and shit, and they go, get the fuck back up before we kill you. That I tried to step in between and go, hey guys, I'm going to try until the knives come out. But he was just like, get the hell out. I don't know what y'all are doing, but get this shit out of my store.
But that's what I think that's a good point, because you playing a dangerous game if you're the store owner. Because you can go.
Of course.
I helped this kid. The store owner knows he's in the neighborhood every day. He knows what's going on. He knows about the gangs. He knows about all that shit. So it's like, he can even help the kid out whose life is in terrible danger.
Mm-hmm.
Or he can let this kid go and was like, this gang may come back for my store. That's my livelihood. It's just dangerous. But it's like, now this guy, the store is in the middle of this situation. It's like you, I mean, like, I'm not going to say you can't blame him, but I mean, like, he could have did more and he could have been just like, man, I can't get in the middle of this because they may come back for me.
And again, I get that. It is a moral conundrum for sure, but it just didn't seem like any of that ran through his mind. I think it's important because I know that, like, racially, there are a lot of, like, groups of white people, black people, Hispanic people. They say, like, specifically in the case of police officers, like, white police officers tend to see young black and brown kids as older. But I would say objectively, Junior Guzman looks like a kid. You know what I mean? Like, he has no facial hair. There's nothing that I would say would make him go, hey, man, I don't know what this guy is doing. Like, I don't know how you don't look at that kid and see a baby. And that's kind of my issue with the store owner, because I go, if it's a guy with a mustache and some tattoos and you go, I don't know, this is a dude. But that kid looks like a baby, man. And he looked terrified, you know? Like,
I totally understand. But this is a bodega. It's on the corner, I assume. It's a lot of shit that happens on the streets. He's probably,
it's probably crazy shit happening all day at a store.
Well, he's like, man, whatever, y'all got to get out, whatever's going on. And he probably seen this, not to this severe extent,
for sure,
but he's probably seen something like this hundreds of times where he's just like, get out of my store with all this.
Yeah.
And he probably didn't think it was that serious.
He couldn't have thought it was going to go this far.
Of course not.
And we'll get into how far means. So like I said, I mean, the video is very hard to watch, but four or five dudes come into that store and drag Junior Guzman out of the store. He's kicking and screaming. I mean, they're yanking him by his shirt, punching him and kicking him. And right outside of the bodega, as soon as they get him outside, this gang of men, which included Manuel Rivera, Jose Munez, Antonio Santiago, and Jonaiki Martinez Estrella, who was the guy that delivered the fatal blow to Junior, they all attacked him with knives and machetes before jumping back in their car, and this is the getaway vehicles, the multiple getaway vehicles, and fleeing the scene, leaving Junior outside of this bodega to bleed out. The fatal blow was delivered to the neck. This guy, Joe Nike, Estrella stabbed this kid in the neck outside of the bodega. As soon as he got him outside, they didn't like take him, put him in the car. They just dragged him outside and started hacking at him with knives and machetes, which is crazy. Again, I know that that was like, you said like that didn't seem real, but that takes up a knife. Like these dudes were riding around in the car looking for people that are opposition to them with knives and machetes in the cars, ready to jump out and just hack at people. That's what they went out to do that night.
Well, it's more than that story, but yeah.
Have I set you up for it? I mean, is there, I don't know.
You want to get to it, but I mean, like, it wasn't, it's not just, it's not as black and white as just, they was just out looking for, they had a reason to be out.
I'm not getting to that. I don't have that. So if you have that, please take over. I don't know that. I don't have any of that. I don't know that.
All right, we'll keep it. Let me jump in with it.
Because I don't know any of that. I thought it was just like a senseless, like, you know, I didn't know they had an objective. But anyway.
Okay.
So Junior attempted to walk to the local hospital, and his walk was captured on several security cameras as he stumbled up the road alone, collapsing on a corner outside the hospital. It is on that corner that Junior, he died on the street that night. People came and there's footage of when they found him, like people running up to him. He still had a little bit of life in him. He was still fighting, but he was alone for a lot of that time, walking and, you know, trying to get to the hospital before he collapsed. And I think pretty immediately, if I'm not mistaken, that night or within a couple of days, the footage from the bodega comes out. The story comes out. It goes viral. Cardi B, local politicians in New York, they're all demanding justice for Junior, with hashtag justice for Junior. I mean, the story goes viral. It blows up all over the internet. And so much of the footage from the bodega was turning people's stomach. People couldn't believe it. You'd like to think you can live in a neighborhood like that and stay out of the way. And the story like this is like, damn. And I think that's why it resonated with so many people, because people were like, damn, man, like this kid he's staying out of the way. These people are supposed to get a pass.
Yeah.
It's like if you're on a basketball team, this is when I was a kid. If you're on the basketball team, you're on the football team, they know you're smart in school. You don't cause any, you're not going around acting tough. People don't fuck with you, man. The kids on the porch, the 15-year-old kids, they don't fuck with the 11-year-old kids because there's 10 of them on the porch. They're like, man, he just rides his bike and just goes in the house. He's not out here trying to be a part of nothing. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
He's a square. Whatever kind of thing they need to even say, even if they're making fun of you, he's a square, man. He doesn't bother anybody. He's lame. Like, he's corny. Those people are supposed to get a pass. And this is like spit in the face of that rule. But it also speaks to, there are no rules. If these are all kids, there's no guidance. These kids are just out here. They're wayward. They're out here just causing chaos and violence. They don't have any rules. So even when you hear a story like this, you go, what? But he was out of the way and he wasn't involved. Those are people supposed to be off limits. There is no off limits when there's no rules, when there's no structure. So I think that's another part of this story that resonated with a lot of people, where you go, wait a minute. So he wasn't. They can't find a reason to why he wasn't in a rival gang. We don't have any pictures of him. I don't think people can make sense of it. Like the news report, like they couldn't find a picture of him looking like intimidating or with a grill in his mouth or something, holding a gun. They couldn't find it. So it's like, well, how is this his fault? It's got to be his fault somehow, right? And they couldn't find that.
I think because you see a lot of that to kind of, again, keep people at ease, where it's just like, I hate this. It's so weird to when we go, it is weird, but it's not weird when we look at the news and we see these incidents that happen and we go, okay, this person was killed. Tragic, it's sad. Oh, but there's news come out that he was a gang member. And you go, all right, well, I don't know.
You can put the pieces together.
Yeah, but you also go, oh, I don't have to worry about that because I'm not. People, that's a real thing.
Yeah, I'm not in a gang, so that's why he was killed, because he was in a gang. So
exactly.
I'm not in a gang.
I'm safe.
When we talked about Pavel LaPierre a couple weeks ago, and we talked about how we love Baltimore because it's like, I'm not involved in any type of shit that would get me killed here. Statistics people read, it's like, those are pretty much people that are involved in that street. Obviously, people get robbed and things like that, but, you know, the violence comes from, violence begets violence, right? And I go, well, I'm not involved in that. And then you hear a story like this.
And you go, oh, this can happen to anybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. Wow. Like, what the fuck?
He wanted to be a police officer. That was his dream when he, as him growing up, that's what he wanted to do. So they couldn't find all that stuff to kind of be like, see, this only happened to these kids or these type of people. Mm-hmm. But like when you can't find that, it's like, no, it's just these kids was out here just acting crazy and they attacked this kid. And then going into what I kind of wanted to bring up, and I think this is the perfect time to bring it up, where I went like, I just don't believe, now this, you, this may be true. I just don't believe that gangs are just riding around and like, I don't, that just doesn't sound real to me. That just, it just doesn't. Maybe because I'm not in the gang, but it just doesn't sound like you got four cars deep, or you, y'all just riding around looking for people. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Like, I get the whole rival thing and revenge and money, but that just doesn't sound, again, that doesn't sound like structure, and it just doesn't sound like a legit gang to me. It just doesn't. But anyway, so Junior, this case was, you know, obviously of a mistaken identity of a teen who was, they was trying to say who was part of a gang.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like to what you said, they couldn't find none of that. But they thought that he was a part of a rival gang, of a gang called Sunset.
Okay.
So they thought this. They thought he
was in Sunset.
Was somebody else, mm-hmm. of a, you know, another gang called Sunset, but that wasn't it. So what happened was, according to a boyfriend of Junior's sister, the Trinitario gang leader stated on Snapchat that the killing was a case of mistaken identity because there was a video that came out, a sex video that came out involving a gang member's family, a family member named Stephanie, mm-hmm. and her boyfriend.
Got it.
His name was Irving.
Right.
And to protect her boyfriend, she went, oh, this is this guy who's, you know, because they was going after him.
God, because
it was like, oh,
you embarrassed her.
You embarrassed my sister. You exposed her type thing. And then she brought up his name. And then they went after. And then I think they, I don't know if she said, I don't know if they, I didn't get a lot of information where it was, it could be two situations where she even knew, mm-hmm. Junior and was like, it's him.
Yeah.
Or she said his name.
And they went asking around looked like, yeah.
And they may, he may have looked like the dude Aaron, Irving, her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean by like, they was out looking for this person.
Right.
Whoever this person was, who is that looked like Junior, they was out looking for him. Is either they was looking for somebody that looked just like him?
For sure.
Or she just was like, nah, it's, she lied on this man.
Well, here's where I agree with you. I didn't read any of that, so I don't know where that's from. But yeah. What I will agree with you on, and that makes total sense, is if you watch the video, it's available on YouTube of them pulling them out of the store. They're mad. This is not just like a, I don't know him, shoot him real quick, and then we.
But that's what I mean. Like that's something that
they
brutal?
Were mad at. They were mad at whether it was a mistake, whatever they were out to do. They were mad about something, and so if one of those friends is like, "That's the guy that put my sister's sex tape video out."
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Because that story came out, this story came out immediately as soon as this happened.
Right.
Because people was calling for her. It was like, no, she should be held accountable for this.
Yeah.
Right? Because she named this dude and was like, to protect her boyfriend, she named him and was like, oh, that's, put a name to this face to saying that was him in the video. And it was like, that wasn't him. And they went after him.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they knew Junior in the neighborhood. Maybe everybody knew who he was. And maybe he had some similar, facial features as the guy that's in the video, mm-hmm. and she just threw that name onto him. I don't know, but they went after this. They was looking for him.
Right.
Right. They was looking for him for a reason. That's why I was just like, you can't tell me they was just out looking
aimlessly
for
doing to, this. Yeah, yeah.
To
for sure.
To brutally kill somebody with me. Like that's just I was like, nah, I can't. I just can't. I can't buy that.
I get that. Well, that what you just put forward makes a lot of sense. I'm gonna have to look into that for sure, but it makes a lot of sense what you're saying for sure.
Yeah.
So the police later arrested 14 people, several who were in Paterson, New Jersey. This also adds to what you just alluded to and what you said, because they were found in a Trinitario safe house. There was like five people that went to Paterson, New Jersey and got found in what was described as almost like a house that's just is owned by somebody in the gang, and they're like, come here. You guys just did some dirt? Come here. So it felt very organized. Like, the phone, and it is a gang, and so I know you say, like, real gang or whatever, but phone calls were made. I mean, yeah. People, after this happened, these four cars drove off. People went to Paterson, New Jersey. People went to Connecticut. One guy went back to the Dominican Republic.
He was like, I'm out of here.
Like, yeah. this shit got bad. Yeah. So a lot of people, like, they left. But they ended up making that person that went to DR, his family was like, you got to go. Because, again, Puerto Rico, New York, Dominican Republic, New York, everything's tied in. Like, family calls back home, whatever. So if you you're the guy that killed that kid, nah, you can't stay at my house. You got to go back to New York, bro. Like, or they're gonna kill you here. Like, people were angry.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure in the Dominican Republic, it's word started getting around. Like, wait, your cousin is that dude, and he's here. Hey, man, listen, he can either die here or go and give that mom justice and go to prison.
For sure. Yeah.
But he can't just be here. That's what I think happened. Because for them to just be like, no, you got to go back to New York and go turn yourself in. He turned himself in. Yeah. I think the options.
Oh, yeah, they were out for their head.
Yeah, I think the options were like, you either can die or go to prison. But those are your only options. You're not just going to be in the Dominican Republic drinking juice and chilling.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. They caught another guy riding around in Connecticut. He was fleeing the state with his wife, with his girlfriend and his baby. He tried to use his baby like a shield. He wouldn't come out of the car. He like went. They pulled the girl out, and then he's like, "I got my baby in the car," but he like grabbed the baby,
as if
they would be.
Oh, so he wasn't like.
No, there was no bullets or anything. It just don't grab me right now because I have my baby. But like, why would you take your baby out of the car seat if you know why you did that?
Yeah.
You tried to be like, "Don't touch me," because I have a baby with me.
Exactly. Yeah.
So. So 14 people were arrested. They were charged for taking part in Junior's murder, and two of them became cooperating witnesses. So, you know, that whole gang and street, I'm tough. It goes out the window, especially when you start, this is one of those things where you go, obviously they know they committed a crime, but that moment, a murder, yes. But when you know, like, that murder's even more not chill than a murder usually would be, like, when you start to go on the internet and you go, oh, we like really fucked up. Cause again, if it was gang on gang, it's not even gonna make the front page.
It's not making the news. Exactly.
It's like, man, I don't know. We'll get 25 to life or whatever we get. We'll have a good time in prison. We'll link up with the other Trinitarios. We'll get, you know, street credit and get all the ramen noodles packets and soups and tuna fish cans that we want. But it's like, oh no, your gang's mad at you. The people, the governor, like you fucked up. This isn't just like, yeah, man, we just did some gang shit. Like, no, you committed like an atrocity. So I think the walls start to close in even more where you might have been able to hold water. Like, man, listen, we did what we did as a gang and none of us are going to talk. It's like, hey, man, listen, you're going to die in prison unless we put you in protective custody. So who wants to turn on these people first? Yeah. Who wants to get the sweetest deal possible?
Right, especially if you're not the one that did that, had that final blow.
Yeah,
right. So they're like, oh man, look, I can't. I'm not taking them.
And again,
I was there, but I'm not. I can't.
And that's what happened. I don't want to misspeak for which one it was, but I believe it was Antonio Santiago that he was the first one to flip, and he was like, I didn't know they were going to kill him. I just thought we were going to beat him up. And as soon as they got outside the store, they started stabbing him. I'm like, what the hell? Now, you can rewrite history, right, once you become a cooperating witness. But maybe that is the case. Maybe that's four cars of people, 14 people involved. Do you think all 14 people were like, yeah, we're going to go kill somebody tonight? I don't know. But it's possible that there were some people that went, I got my jumping boots on. I thought we were just going to go stomp a kid out.
No. I don't think none of them thought that.
Thought what? That this was just going to be a fight?
They got machetes. Yeah. Like, no, come on. If I think it should be clear, it's like, now I'm not, this is me talking. This is me talking like, because I'm not in the game.
Yeah.
I feel like if we out rolling and you got a machete, I would assume that you're going to make it clear, like, this is just I'm just going to intimidate.
This is a prop.
I'm not going to actually, I'm not going to actually use it. Just want to scare him a little bit. I go, oh, okay, cool. But it's like, if that talk doesn't come up at all and y'all riled up and I'm like, nah, this is going to go completely wrong.
Hey, let me out the car.
You know what's going down.
Let me out the car.
You know what's going down. Yeah, you know what's going
down. Oh, I'm
going. It's a full car?
Yeah.
Nah, man. It's.
Man.
Nah.
All of these scenarios, every scenario ever, I'm Trey from Boys in the Hood. Every time, bro. Hey, man, pull the car over real quick. That's the day I drop my flag. And I'll deal with whatever. I just thought we were going to wear fun colors. I love lime green, and I love the culture. I love representing my flag, and I like hanging out with you guys on the corners and having a good time.
Until she get real.
I don't want to go hurt people. Yeah. Can we pull over, please? We can deal with this tomorrow. I'll come to the meeting, and you guys can jump me out or whatever. But I don't.
It won't be no. I will be. I'm out of state. I'm gone. You will not see me again. I'm out of here.
Like, guys, I swear I'll come. I'll turn in my gang card, and I'll bring you guys my flag tomorrow. Not. I'm going to the Dominican Republic. Well, I'll be a hero because they'll be like, "You're the guy that didn't go and kill this little this innocent kid." Good.
Yeah, it don't need to be 8 of 10 of y'all.
It was terrible, man. 4 cars, man.
I can't even.
4 cars full of people.
The fear in that little boy's eyes.
Getting chased by 4 cars. The cars are skirting around corners. People jumping out. That's crazy, man.
And not even know what the hell's going on. He has no idea.
That part.
He has no.
Why when you contextualize it that way, and you think about him running into the store, and the guy's like, "Hey, man," you're just like, it's like a nightmare. You can't find the right words. You're like,
exactly, bro. He probably couldn't even get it out.
Help me. Like, help me. Help me. Hey, man, listen. Get the fuck. I don't know, but take it out. And it's like, bro, if you don't help me, I'm done. Like, that's what makes me so upset. Because you go 14 people. I saw the knives. I saw the machetes. If you don't hide me somewhere, I don't know what they're going to do to me out there. And now I've come in the store, so I can't even get back in stride. I'm cornered. And that's what happened. So the jury took just 2 days. This was in 2019. The jury took just 2 days to reach a guilty verdict for the defendants, Jonaiki Martinez Estrella, who was 25 years old at the time he was convicted. So again, these weren't even kids too. These were like, oh, I mean, they're young, but still. The guy that delivered the death blow, 25 years old. Antonio Santiago, 25 years old. Jose Munoz, 23 years old. Manuel Rivera, 19 years old, and Elvin Garcia, 25 years old. These were grown-ass men. Compared to a 15-year-old kid?
Yeah.
These were grown dudes. So Martinez, who prosecutors said struck the fatal blow, like I said, he stabbed Junior in his neck, he was sentenced to life without parole. Munoz, Garcia, and Rodriguez, they'll all be eligible for parole after 25 years. And Rivera will be eligible for parole after 23 years. In 2023, the final 6 gang members involved in Junior Guzman's killing were sentenced to prison. Danilo Pacheco, who was 26 years old, Ronald Urania, who was 33 years old, Jose Tavares,
give it up, man.
I mean, you're in a gang?
Give it up, dog. Give it up.
But, like, to be in a gang and y'all out here killing kids...
Kids.
Even if you're jumping kids, like y'all are getting in fights with 15-year-olds, even if they just jumped them, you're 33 years old and you were involved in jumping a 15-year-old kid? Like, come on, bro. You're supposed to be the voice of reason in that situation. 33?
Yeah, man.
Come on, bro. Now, again, I think these are like accessories after the fact, drivers. These 6 guys who got convicted this past year were not, I don't believe anyway, directly involved in putting hands on Junior Guzman. But they were like drivers. They like let them stay at their house after they left the scene. They were like accessories to evading the police.
Yeah.
So, but still, those are still crimes. You still contributed to concealing this. So also, Gabriel Ramirez Concepcion, he was 30 years old. These 6 guys were sentenced by the Bronx Supreme Court. His name was Justice Ralph Fabrizio. They all got varying prison sentences from 12 to 18 years for manslaughter. And then the 6th man, whose name was Luis Cabrera, he was 29 years old, was sentenced to 12 years in prison on the same charge. These were the final defendants of the 13 total who were charged in the case of the murder of Lisandro Junior Guzman, who was 15 years old back in 2018. Absolutely. Horrific case, and there's a lot of speculation. You touched on some speculation. I touched on some speculation. Again, I don't think that his friends set him up. They were, there's Reddit subreddits that are calling him like the $5 friend. I just think it was bad timing. I think he needed $5, and he went. Junior always looks out. Maybe he can come run me $5 real quick. I'll let him hit the blunt. which is what I assume happens. If we're just, you know, we're not going to paint people out to be perfect. He went down there, gave his friend $5. They were smoking. He hung out with them for like 45 minutes before he took off. He probably smoked up a little bit, you know, and chatted and talked about shit that's going on in the fights. And that's what they were talking about, fights that happen and other shit. Shit's crazy out here.
Yeah.
I don't think he like sent him a text for the gang so he would come out of the house. And I don't think that. But when you introduce the element that you're talking about, I don't know.
I won't rule it out. That's for sure. I don't think
it's just tough because I don't like to. We're speculating cases. The case, you know, just closed in a sense this year, back in January when these other six guys got convicted. And so these people, that guy, his name's Jason, he had to leave the state. He gets death threats. And so I don't want to contribute to things that are unfounded theories. Like, I like to theorize and speculate on this podcast, obviously. Like, it's interesting to come up with, like, how we see the pieces. But there's really no evidence that this kid did that. And so I don't want to be like, I don't know, man. I think he did that. You know, and I'm not saying you said that. But I'm just saying, you saying you wouldn't rule it out, I think is safe to just go, I don't know, it's possible. It's possible that, you know, whoever this girl is wanted to protect her boyfriend, and so they needed a scapegoat, and who knows how far they went to set Junior Guzman up as a scapegoat. We don't know. And, you know, so.
I have another little nugget that I wanted to share. I don't know if you read this. I'm guessing you didn't read it, but the store owner was named was Modesto Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out and said that he had to deal with it, you know, mentally and, you know, emotionally.
Sure.
About the whole incident.
Yeah.
He received death threats,
mm-hmm.
and he said that when his mother watched the footage of what happened, she suffered a heart attack and died.
Get the fuck out of here!
And then they say he's still, at the time, and this article was January 16th of 2020.
Uh-huh.
That he's still getting psychological treatment.
Yeah.
Because of what that incident and what happened to his mother, and then he said my life changed.
That's
my mind
crazy.
Has completely changed. People was on his head about this.
Oh,
like, why didn't you help this child?
Yeah, for sure.
Like he's always going to be that guy.
And the Bronx is such a like immigrant community. There's so many Hispanic people in the Bronx. Right. It's like it's like a community.
Yeah,
it's like you're the bodega neighbor. People are supposed we come here. We spend money here. We know we know your family, like you know our family. Like, it's supposed to be a community.
Yeah. His mom could have got some heat, could have caught some heat from that. You kind of start connecting people to people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's his mother. She probably was getting some of that, and all that was her being a, you know, a older woman, elderly. And
yeah.
It was just like all that was just probably just too much.
You know, your son's a coward, all this type of shit. You know, like that's because I'm not trying to be harsh on the dude. I understand it's a split second decision, everything like that, but people aren't trying to hear that. And the internet is unforgiving. So as far as the internet is concerned, to me, the internet gave him the same treatment. And I'm not saying it's the same thing, but it's the same treatment that they gave the Stoneman Douglas High School. There was a security guard that was like, I'm not going in there. There was a security guard at the school shooter was in there.
Oh, yeah.
He was nah, like that's who you are forever. And there's no like explanation. You can give a logical explanation. Like he had a logical explanation. He goes, split second, shit happens all the time. I don't know. I didn't know they were going to do that. Like, no, you're a coward. Like
for sure.
The internet, as far as the internet is concerned, all the people they're like, close this. We don't want you in the neighborhood anymore. You could come out there and give the most logical. Listen, the whole incident was 15 seconds. I didn't know it was. No, get the fuck out of there. We don't want you here. You're a coward. You let the guy get killed on your watch.
But you can't blame the people. It's like when you put on that. Well, he was in uniform, right? He was as an officer.
I'm talking about the bodega owner now. But yeah,
I'm just saying the similarities, but
same treatment. The police officer is like, he's in his mind, he's probably like, I didn't have a gun or whatever. We don't care, bro. You're the security guard, and you said you're not going in.
It's hard for me to. We don't know, obviously, but it's like it's hard for me to believe that. Young Junior went in that store and said, I understand the emotions and the fear that he probably went through, that he probably couldn't talk clearly, but like, it's hard for me to believe that. And we don't even know if Junior speaks Spanish, but I would assume he does, but it's like, we don't even know. It's hard for me to believe that
he didn't say anything.
That terrified. and
he definitely he Storm had to say, confused. Help me.
Help if at the least, the Storm are being confused, but I just think that he probably deal with so much shit, probably go fights and shit.
I get that.
And he probably was like, no, you got to get out. Y'all got to get out. And it's hard for me to believe that kid running there didn't. This is a kid, man. The running there and not say help. Help me. That one is tough. I don't know if I can believe it went down that way.
Yeah. And neither can the internet.
This kid was terrified. He didn't know what the fuck was going on. Yeah. People are after me. He didn't went in there and didn't say nothing. Nah, man, I don't.
And so I feel for the guy. I definitely feel for his mom. I didn't mean to come off as insensitive. I feel for him in that sense, but I also am not on the side of you could have done more. I would have been again.
I think naturally everybody should be.
If
it would be.
Again, if I would have and here's how simple people are. I think if they saw a little bit of resistance, and then they mush him in the face or push him or something, and then he's like, hey, sorry, man. People go, this isn't even the story anymore. He tried to step in front of him. He said, hey, guys, come on, let's take it out of the store. But with Junior behind him. If we saw in the video he did something to say, no, man, come on, like, let's not do this thing. And then they go, swing, and put the knife at him or something. You go, and then it's like, hey, man.
It's like, I can do.
It's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
It wouldn't even be a story. But because it was like get out of here, like, no, get the fuck. Him showing resistance to him and then them dragging him out and them him not going, hey, all right, man, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't, he doesn't, your you story, know, yeah. it's now you become the story. Because now not only did you not help, you kind of were like, get the fuck out. You know, I think even a sliver of help would have carried a lot more favor than get the fuck out. I feel for him and rest in peace to his mom, but the internet's not trying to hear any kind of logic or reason that you have about any of that.
No way that store is still open.
No. It's under new management.
Especially if it's like, what do you call it? Is it called murals?
A mural. If there's a mural or a memorial there of any kind, no. It's under new management. He's there's no way he's there anymore. But yeah, man, rest in peace to Junior Guzman, man. A story that really shocked me when I first heard it, shocked me when I saw the video. It really spoke to where we are as a society morally, that could happen. And nobody said, hey, stop. But I know that it hit the internet waves and it hit people hard. But I feel like it's been almost 6 years since it happened. And so, I'm glad that we could retouch on it and maybe introduce it to some people who haven't heard about it and also get into some of the sociological implications of gang wars, kids trying to stay out of the way. Like, there's a conversation to be had there about, I don't know, man. It's a lot of conversations that are applicable to the Junior Guzman story that are bigger than just a senseless killing. So I hope that those conversations can be had, and maybe one day we can, you know, I don't know, find a solution to a lot of issues that plague us as humans. But moving on, one last time again, if you know, anybody who is a new visitor stopping by, I hope you enjoyed this story. At this point, this is when we get into a little recommendations corner. So, Fran, before we get out of here, I will say I've been captivated by The Floor. Have you seen The Floor? It's a game show. Hosted by Rob, the guy from Parks and Recreation, the handsome guy. Rob, who gives a shit what his name is? The Floor is basically, they get like 100 people who say that they're specialists in something, like actors, jelly bean flavors, breeds of cats. And when you come, that's what your expertise is. And then they get all these people, they put them on a board. And then one by one, they go, would you like to challenge somebody to steal their square on the board? So if I'm an expert in cat breeds and you're an expert in cars, I will go, I want Fran's spot. So I'm going to challenge Fran on cars with the thing that he's an expert in. So they call you up to the stage. They call both of us up to the stage. And on the screen, they go, you know, they show you a picture of like the Chevrolet sign, but they don't say the name of it. You're supposed to go, Chevrolet. Then I go. And then we go back and forth until the time goes down, and whoever gets the most answers correct wins. But if I beat you in your category, I get your square, and then you go the fuck home. And the objective is to get the most squares. So by the end of the game, there'll be one person left with 88 squares on the board.
This sounds like a fun Jeopardy or something.
It's like Jeopardy, but it's faster paced, and it's like, I don't even really care about, I like playing the game. Like, I want to be on the show.
Oh, I'm gonna
check so fun. It's called The Floor. It's so fun. Like, it's like Family Feud, but also it's like Heads Up. It's crazy. Like, and it's,
do people got like personalities? Is that
yeah,
how you,
and it's so many people.
That's the only reason how you get on the show.
And it's so many people. And the thing is, every episode, whoever has the most squares at the end of the episode, you win $20,000. But whoever is the last person standing wins $250,000. So what happens is, if I have four squares and you have three squares, I'm trying to get more than four squares before the episode's over, so at least I get something. So if I get eliminated, if I don't win, I still got 20 racks. So that's when it gets competitive, and it's like, and then the more you start to eat up squares, the more you become a target. So if you got 10 squares, I'm trying to come at you so I can, because if I beat you, I get all 10 of your squares and send you home. So,
but do they?
Oh, go ahead.
But do the your opponents, do they know what your expertise is?
Yep. So here's the crazy part, right? So the example I gave, I know cats and you know cars.
Yeah.
So I beat you and I get cars. So now I get to stay cats. But if you beat me, like I challenge you and you beat me, now we've played your expertise, so you can't play it anymore. Now you're cats.
So yours change.
I get sent home and you get my expertise. So now if somebody wants to challenge you, they got to challenge you on cats. And you're like, I don't know shit about cats.
Oh, yeah.
But you got to take mine.
Okay.
Because we just played yours. Yeah, yeah. So that's the twist.
So if the other person challenges you on cats and you lose, you're done. So say you challenge me and I won.
Right.
Challenge me on cars, I won.
You won.
But now I have your cats expertise.
And I go home.
Somebody else, you gone. Somebody else challenged me on cats.
You gotta play.
But I lose, I'm going home.
You're going home.
Oh, that's bullshit. Yeah. That sucks.
No, I'm telling you.
Look, I thought you lose a square or something. That's
no,
sucks.
You get sent home. Let me tell you the craziest one. It was a dude, he had like 50 squares. He challenged a girl on hobbies. That's all she had was hobbies. She just had managed to stick around for a long time, so there was only like 8 people left. She had one square, bro. But you gotta get all the squares to win the game. So he's like, I gotta go challenge. I'm gonna go try to get hobbies. Man, they talked about skydiving, crocheting, all the shit. She beat him. The whole board. She got 50 pieces in one go and sent him home. She had one.
You get all his shit.
You get all his shit.
Sick.
You get all his shit, and then whatever his thing was that he was, now you're that. So now if his was like flavors of coffee, yours was hobbies. You defended hobbies, but now hobbies is done. And now you gotta play with the 51 pieces that you have on coffee flavors. And you might not know shit about coffee flavors, but you got 51 pieces now, and everybody's coming at you, and they might come at you on a subject that you don't know shit about.
Okay. So how do you challenge people? You take turns, or
they do a random thing, like, boom. And then you can only challenge people that you're touching. Okay. So it's almost like a chessboard. I mean,
go the whole episode without being challenged to challenge anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like that.
So you can stick around for a long time and only have one square. But if you get challenged by somebody with 50 squares and you beat them, you get 50 squares. So you can go from, you could be the last person standing and somebody can have 88 pieces of the board and you got one. And you beat them and you knock them out and you get all their shit.
Mm.
It's crazy.
It's the end of the episode or end of the season?
Say it again.
That's a lot of damn. Is it you win at the end of the episode? Or you win at the end.
You
of the
win
season?
At the end of the. You win at the end of the season. But at the end of the. Oh,
okay.
But at the
end
of the,
damn 80.
But at the end of the episode, if you have the most pieces of the night, you get 20 grand.
Ooh,
so you can get sent home, but if you win one of the, so it's 10 episodes. So you got 10 opportunities to win 20 grand if you stick around. You got 10 opportunities to win 20 grand, and then if you get sent home, you don't get anything. But if you won one of the nights where it's like, I had 4 pieces one night and everybody else had one, so I got 20 grand. So you still got a chance to win something before you get sent home. But only one person can win 250.
Okay.
I love it. I don't even like game shows like that. This one, I don't know what it is, what they put in this. I don't know what they sprinkled in this game. I love it. I'm addicted to it.
I'm going to check it out. I'm going to check it out tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Big.
That sounds fun.
Big fan of The Floor, man. I don't know.
Well, if you go on there, what would your expertise be?
Discontinued soda flavors.
Okay.
Like the Pepsi Blues, the,
yeah,
you know, different types of Shastas, different types of Faygos, something like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the obvious one, okay, would be, I think I'd do pretty good anything pop culture, actors or something like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I,
yeah.
But
yeah,
but
yeah,
the thing is, sometimes you, the thing that a lot of people did is they went obscure so people get scared. You stick around longer. Because there was a one, okay, one guy said his expertise was songs about places. I believe, okay, you. If you say movies, I'm like, that's too generic. Like, I'll challenge you on that. But if you go flavors of lemon heads, I'm like, you know that. Like, that's too specific.
Yeah.
So I will probably pick something, mm-hmm, that, you know, if I go actors, it's a bunch of people that think they know actors. But if you go butterfly species, it's like, nah, I'm not even, leave him be. So you might stick around for a long time if you pick a thing that's obscure. But okay, if you really don't, I might be lying. Because I think, I mean, I had Pepsi Blue when I was 10. That doesn't mean I know all, yeah, of the shit from 1950. So when, yeah, it gets down to it, when it really comes and you come challenge me, I might have stuck around for a long time. But when it comes time to you challenge me, I'm going to lose. So that's the, okay, that's the difficulty of picking that strategy. But that's the strategy I would pick.
Yeah. Mine would be, if it's, like you said, some of those ones that's like generic, if it's not like players' names, I think I'm pretty good,
oh,
with
like
that.
Athletes?
Like athletes' names or cars, I'm pretty good with cars. Names, not just logos, like names, like the model of the car.
Right.
I think I'd do pretty good with models of the car. I think that's not as easy as a symbol.
Sure.
Models of the car, I think I would do better than a lot of people.
There was a lady who picked tools. She was like, I'm an expert in tools. I'm remodeling the house right now. I know about tools. Another girl came up there. She didn't know. She was like, I don't know anything about tools either. The first one out of the gates, the lady who picked the category, boom, nails. She struggled on nails. She was like, screws. And if you get it wrong, it doesn't buzz or anything, but it won't give you the ding until you get it right. So she's like, and the time's ticking down. Screws. They're nails. There's a difference. So no, it's not. It's not.
So does one? Do you both get a chance to say it, or one person?
No. Here's how it goes. See, oh man, I don't want to take up people's time. So if you're still here, I'm sorry. But it's no, okay. But yeah, listen, because yeah, this is my favorite part.
Because I want to know now.
So it's a person on each side, and you go. It alternates. So I go nails. Boom. Hammer. Boom. The thing comes, okay, up. It's a screwdriver. I don't know screwdriver. Pass. When you say pass, the timer goes down three. You only got 60 seconds. Okay. When you say pass, the timer goes down 3 seconds before they show you the next picture. So you lose 3 seconds every time you pass. And once you get to zero, you're done. But the other person's time stops while you go. So let's say, you know,
you get 60 seconds to answer.
You get 60 seconds to answer as many as you can.
So you just keep on going.
No. It alternates. But if you get it wrong, you can't throw it back to them till you get one right. So okay, you go again, hammer, boom. Now next person, nail, boom. Pass. Now your timer's still going down, but the other person's timer isn't going down. They're still at 55 seconds. Now your shit's, yeah, at 50 seconds, 48 seconds. Pass. It's a sander now. 30 seconds, but they're still at 50 seconds. Vice grips, boom. Now it goes back to them, but they got 50.
Okay, so it's,
they got 50. Okay. They got 55 seconds, and you only got 25 seconds. But now, okay, they get stuck. Pass. And now that shit goes down to 30 seconds. Circular saw, boom. Now it's 30 seconds to 25 seconds. But once it's down to zero, you lose. So it really is, okay, like sometimes people get smoked. It's like I'm breezing through mine. I got 55 seconds left, and you only got 5 seconds left. Yeah. So it's I can talk about the floor all day, man. I might start a floor podcast, you know.
That's a Hansbro game right there.
That's what I'm saying. I want to play it at home. Like, it's exciting. Yeah, get it on the screen. Sure. It hasn't been,
yeah,
you know, it's, you know, yeah, they have the Game Show Network. I done seen all the game shows. None of these shows have ever, yeah, grabbed me like this one grabbed me. Yeah. I'm in. I could watch this shit.
Oh, you're not into Floor is Lava? You're not into that?
No, I don't. No. What is that? Not since the one, you remember the game show? It's like a Korean game show where you got to try to make it's like a cutout of the wall and the wall comes towards you and you got to try to like
Got jumped through
it. Do a yoga pose. The fit.
Yeah, get into it.
Since that game show.
Those is fun. Yeah.
Have I been like, oh, I'm here. If prime time, 8 o'clock at night, I'm here. I got popcorn popped. I'm ready to watch The Floor.
Why is it The Floor? Is it like tiles?
The Floor, because everybody, The Floor, you're trying to get all the pieces on the floor.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's standing. Right. Everybody that's on the show is standing in a square. And each person you beat, you get a piece of the floor, and you want to get the whole floor. Oh,
I'm in. Yeah, I'm in.
Man. Still, and after all that talking, I know his name's Rob something, but I can't remember. He's a handsome guy, man. He's from the 80s. He's a great guy. I don't know his name, though. But yeah, man. Hey, this has been another episode of Affirmative Murder. And if you're, like I said, if you're new here, that's just some of the good old banter you get. We just talked about a game show for 45 minutes, it feels like. Most of the episode might have been about The Floor, but whatever, man. That's what we do here. I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans. And we'll see you guys next week.
Deuces.